Hey, listeners, welcome to week four of a series called Healing After. This is part of a master's project for me because I am a seminary student and a transgender woman. Go do the math. But I'm so glad that you joined me today. Today, we're going to kick off our podcast with Dr. Z. Dr. Z has a YouTube channel. You can go look her up. Dr. Z, PhD. Dr. Z was an instrumental voice in my life and transition before I came out. I always talk about my transition was very much theological than it was physical or anything else. And Dr. Z really helped me work through some things. So to begin our podcast today, she's going to be answering a series of questions, but I really want to tune in to the last question that talks about somebody who was at a Christian college. And I just think it's going to speak to you. So let's kick off week four of Healing After. Here we go. Enjoy Dr. Z.
Videos have been a really good experience for me. I'm so glad to hear. I've been out as trans masculine for nearly 4 years now, but in the past almost year, with the rise of transphobia, I found myself faced with a lot more agonizing and pain from the way I feel. My question is really, can experience ongoing discrimination affect the way I experience dysphoria? Yes, I'm taking a deep breath because absolutely it can and it does affect your sense of dysphoria. Because think about it this way. So dysphoria is a psychological distress that you're feeling as a result of the incongruency you feel with your gender identity. Like I said, you still live in a world that is gendering your body. Not only body, this world is gendering your body functions. And everything else around it. So when you already feel dysphoria, you already feel incongruency, and then you step into the environment of the world where there's so much more hate and stigma, and everybody's talking about your identity, and everybody's talking about whether your identity is right or not, or should exist or not, or whether it is a psychological issue, or whether it's a medical issue, or whether and on and on and on and on. And you get in the midst of this vortex, it's going to exasperate issues of dysphoria, and it's going to make you that much more almost the word I'm looking for, susceptible, but I'm looking for another word. It's going to make you very sensitive, I want to say, to all of that in relationship to dysphoria. A lot of people right now feel like their dysphoria has exponentially went up because of what's happening in the world, because of how much emphasis is being put on transgender issues, because of anxieties and fears with gender-affirming care being banned. And that's going to exasperate things, because when the world is also putting a mirror front and frontal to what you're already struggling with, there's no way for you to escape it. There's no way for you to get a little bit of a breathing room, a little bit of respite from it. And that makes it very, very difficult. If the world wasn't putting so much emphasis on transgender affirming care right now, a lot of you would have a more breathing room. A lot of you would have less anxiety. A lot of you would have more time to sit with yourself to figure out what you really need versus feeling so much despair. So yes, absolutely. It can exasperate you, dysphoria that you feel. I would recommend limit. News, limit media, social media, limit all of those things, and try to find yourself, carve out a time in a day when you can be quiet with yourself, when you can sit with yourself, when you're away from all these outlets, because absolutely it can, that discrimination can definitely increase that. And I want you to take care of yourself. And I'm so sorry. The world is such a painful place right now. So my heart really goes out to you, and other people comment below, share what you recommend, because I know all of you are going through this very, very difficult time. Question number five. Hi, I'm still working my way through your video library, but I have a couple of questions. What would you advise for someone that has had gender identity and dysphoria in a repressed state due to prolonged denial? And what would be recommended as first steps for someone that has awakened from denial late in life, but now fully acknowledges it? It's a great, great question. A lot of adults, especially older adults I work with, experience this repressed state due to prolonged denial, especially the older you are, you lived and experienced maturity of your childhood in a time frame when there was no really language, we weren't talking about gender concepts. And so as a result, it was that much more easier to repress and that much more easier not to deal with the things. And things can sit on us. You'd be surprised for a very long time until the lid goes up and they all come to the surface. I recommend if you just became aware of it, and by the way, when you just become aware of it, it can be really and is incredibly overwhelming. I call it gender crisis, when suddenly the lid went off and you're looking at yourself and you're looking at your world and suddenly everything has shifted, your life has shifted. And for a lot of it, it's very hard because you already have, I call it ecosystems, right? You have families, you have work, you have other things around you, and you're terrified because then shifts have to be made sometimes. And that's really, really scary. And it's terrifying to figure out things about yourself that have been repressed for a long, long time and that you haven't been in touch with. It can be really, really scary. At the same time, it can also feel very liberating, and it can also feel very freeing in the midst of all of that fear. So what I recommend as the first steps is take a deep breath. You just became aware of it, even though maybe you spent years and years and years in denial. It also doesn't mean that you have to drop everything and run and rush into things just because you're looking at your lifespan and you're saying, oh my God, I'm in my, I don't know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and I better get over and deal with it before my life is over. Give yourself a breathing room. Giving yourself several months, even a year of untangle all of this and make sense of everything and to process the aspects of denial dating back to maybe even your childhood. A year is not a long time. It may sound like it's a long time, but it is not a long time. And it'll just make the rest of the process, whatever it is you decide to engage in, so much better for you and so much more smoother for you, because you're going to know yourself much more and your relationship with yourself will be established. So my first advice is give yourself time. Take a deep breath. You acknowledge this is happening. Now, what does it all mean to you? What does it all mean to you? What is your gender bubbling to the surface telling you right now? For some adults, it's telling them that they no longer can live in their gender assigned at birth. They no longer can't do it. For some adults, it suddenly explains the way they've been relating, the way their relationship has been. It suddenly lends itself to explaining why their life has been the way it is. For some adults, it's this realization that, oh, I have this gender inner conflict that I never realized I have, but I'm also not ready, nor do I want to do anything about it. So sit with what is it telling you? What do you need at all to do anything about it, instead of just, you know, rushing or listening to what people telling you how to do? Listen to yourself. What does yourself need? Sometimes our inner selves need more time. Sometimes our inner selves need to connect to that part of our gender that has been blocked away for so, so long. Sometimes our inner self needs to establish contact. Your conscious mind need to now establish a dialogue with a part of your identity, and you need to hear what that part of your identity is telling you. What are they trying to say? For some people, it's saying, I need to breathe. I'm suffocating. Let me the heck out of here. For some people, it says, I'm freaking out. Here I am. I'm part of you and you're part of me and I'm freaking out. It can say so many things. So take your time, allow yourself time, take a deep breath, and give yourself that much. If you spent a long time in denial, especially, I feel like you owe to yourself a little bit of time to unravel the denial a little bit more. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that unravel is in the sense of, oh, maybe you're not trans. No, just understand more that part of yourself that has been locked away and dormant for so long. Just establish a line of connection, a dialogue, if you will. So that would be my recommendation. And you're not alone. So many people experience this, and it can be really a lot of clients that I see are in that position. They come to me and they're like, I just realized this, and what the heck do I do about it? And you know, we spend a few sessions diving really deep in and discovering what it means for them. And sometimes it turns out that they feel that they need to make those steps toward gender transition. And sometimes they say, no, I'm not ready yet, and I need some more time. All valid. And sometimes people say, I don't want to do anything about it. All valid. So sit with it. Final question for today. I'm stuck. Well, hold on. Yeah, I was going to show there's no more questions. I don't want to miss out. I'm stuck at a conservative Christian college for another year. It's been difficult balancing being me versus wearing the mask. Yeah, I bet. To make it through the day, I've been dissociating and going on autopilot. I'm not going to lie, not the bad thing you can do for yourself. Really not good. At the end of the day, it feels like this gender gremlin is trying to tear it away out. Gender gremlin? You mean your authentic self, you call it gender gremlin? Do you have any advice on how to navigate college and tradition so I don't have the mental distress on top of dysphoria? Ooh, tough questions for today. I can hear a lot of you are struggling with so much. And this is another tough one. You know, my first advice, try not to dissociate and be on autopilot. Dissociation is such not a good coping mechanism. Once you start dissociating, you then form a habit of dissociating. And then when you, even people who now feel more in alignment with who they are, continue to struggle with dissociation, even after transition, it's such a difficult thing to kind of beat out of yourself and to be present. It's really important to be present, to be grounded in the world and not to dissociate. So my first advice is there any other coping that you can do other than dissociating and being on autopilot? Because it's really not going to serve you in the long run. I was going to say college is often one of the best environments for people to express their gender identity because it tends to be such a melting pot of diversities and cultures and genders and expressions and so on and so forth. But you're in a Christian college, so it seems like that might not be the best place for that avenue. Can you see a therapist? Even if you see somebody once a month to unpack it all, to talk about it, can you form a support group of like-minded people online? Can you show up as yourself in other parts of your life? Even if it's online, even if it's just a picture of you, true authentic self on Instagram, even if it is something else, how can you allow your authentic self shine in other areas of your life to offset the stress you feel when you're on college campus, the stress you feel when you have to, like you said, wear a mask, because wearing a mask can be very painful. That would I would really, really recommend. Do you have to go to this Christian college? Can you transfer to another college? Is that an option for you? If that's not an option for you, again, how can you not so much? Also, here's another thing, though. How can you not see it as I'm wearing a mask and wake up in the morning with this negative visceral dialogue? I'm just about to step out the door and I'm about to put on a mask and I hate it and I'm going to pretend who I am and I hate it that nobody can see me or know who I am. So I'm going to dissociate and be an autopilot. How can you wake up and have a different conversation with yourself that, okay, I'm going to college. It's not the safest environment to be myself. So this part of my gender assigned at birth, that while I don't feel congruent with that part of me, is that it's still also a part of me. And I'm going to let that part to be in the forefront center because that's also the part that's right now keeping me safe, at least in the context of the college. So I'm going to allow that to keep me safe as a container throughout the day, but I'm going to be present and grounded within myself. How can you also not divorce yourself so much from your gender assigned at birth? I see a lot of people do that where they just really want to annihilate their old selves. And, you know, again, it's not the best way to go. So how can you do that? That I think wouldn't be really, really helpful to you. And again, support system is going to be huge for you. But more than anything is having the dialogue where you're not hating that part of yourself so much, where you're not feeling like you're wearing a mask, where you're feeling like, yeah, I'm showing up. And this is just part of me showing up that I'm working on toward my authenticity, but this is also part of it until I step into my full authentic self. Hopefully this helps. I really hope others will comment below and share their input. And thank you.
If you're like me, it can be hard to find an LGBTQ community of faith. Well, we are building that right now at patreon.com/JoannaWhaley. You can connect with other LGBTQ people and allies who also are interested in faith and spiritual things. Right now, for just $4.99 a month, you can join a community of other LGBTQ people who also are serious about faith and spirituality. For just $4.99 a month, we can talk through direct message. We can have Zoom calls. I can basically be your pastor online. And you don't have to go to a church to be re-traumatized if that has been you. Just go to patreon.com/JoannaWhaley.com. Again, patreon.com/JoannaWhaley. We'll see you there. Well, welcome back. I hope that you enjoyed Dr. Z. I said at the beginning of this whole podcast episode that Dr. Z has a YouTube channel that deals specifically with transgender issues, but for me, it was really instrumental in helping me process intellectually what transition meant and what coming out meant. So, I'm thankful. I talked with her and got permission to use that this week, and just really thankful for the work she does. Now let's look at this week. If you've been following at any pace, I actually want to say this before. Dr. Z also mentioned that if you are, you know, if you're like this person, you need support. I'm actually starting to host support groups. Starting in June, I determined that this Pride Month, I'm going to kick off support groups on the first and third Monday of every month, and they're going to be hosted through my Patreon. You can join that for free if it's something you can't pay for, or if that's a safety issue for you, but you can join Patreon. Go to patreon.com/JoannaWhaley, and the support groups will be available for you there. They're all online. I'll host one at noon Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that's for some people, they can do that on their lunch break or at work, if that's the safest place for you to do it. Okay, let's dive in. Today, week four of this series we've been calling Healing After. And what is this series? This series was the part of a master's project. So I'm sure some of you have gotten your red pens out and you have been judging me harshly playing professor this whole series. And week one, what I sought out to do is find out, is there an intersection between LGBTQ people and spirituality? Is the LGBTQ community hungry, and do they want spiritual care without having to go back to church to be re-traumatized? And the question I went out to seek in this series was, can we offer that care detached from a church? Because church has been traumatizing for LGBTQ people. Let's just be honest. Let's call it what it is. Because in week one, if you go back, and I definitely suggest going back to listen to this series, because week one, if you only listen to that one, you will be horribly depressed about the state of the church. Because I went through the dark history of the church and how the church has intersected with the queer community. For generation after generation, the church has mistreated queer people. And I went through some of the deepest, darkest things that we've had to deal with in the history of the church and being a queer person. And I talked about just how difficult it is to be an LGBTQ person and have faith, because institutionally, religion has really tried to stamp out queerness and anything that's not heteronormative. And so that for me has been, that was week one. Week two was really fun. If you go back and listen to that one, I did a research survey with LGBTQ people, and a wide range, anywhere from people who were seminarians all the way to people who are professed atheists. And we had, I think, over 200 respondents to this this research project. And down the road, definitely would love to expand it to thousands. But what we sought to find out was, is there a market out there? Are people interested in having spiritual care? Because if I ask these questions and nobody wants it, then what's the point, right? So what we did is we went through, in week two, I went through all the data. I asked questions like, are you in ongoing therapy? Have you ever talked about your sexual orientation or your gender identity in therapy? The next question was, has religion ever been a part of that discussion? And we had an overwhelming amount of people say yes in that survey. And then we started asking questions like, okay, before you came out and before, you know, you knew what was going on with you, what was your religious identity? And then we asked the question after you came out, what was your religious identity then? And we saw a huge change in that data of people who began as Christian and now professed different things, or atheists or spiritual, but not really affiliated. And then we really drilled into why, like, tell us the reasons why. And we dove into that there. But then week three, last week, what I did is I took this data, I took the history, I took the data, and I connected the two points. We connected the two points in the idea of saying, okay, well, there is a need for this, but how the heck do we do it? And I made the case last week on the podcast in week three of the series saying, how would a clinical and spiritual care work together? And where would they work together? And the comments that I have heard and the response to this series has been incredible. I've gotten so many wonderful notes and comments and messages about how encouraging this has been for people to hear that someone's even talking about this. Because many times, spirituality for LGBTQ people is an afterthought, or it's almost treated as if it's a cause. It's almost treated as if it's a problem. And what I want to do and what I'm seeking to do is figure out, how can we as LGBTQ people keep our faith intact through the process of coming out? Now, it will have to shift, because obviously we've seen through this research, we've seen through this project, that there is a systemic failure when it comes to affirming LGBTQ people. So how do we walk through this life, be ourselves fully, authentically us as we were created? If we believe, and people like to say this all the time, God doesn't make mistakes. That'll be a whole podcast series at one point. You know, God doesn't make mistakes, so why would you change it, right? But if we believe, if I'm somebody who reads the scripture that's weaponized against me many times to say, I don't believe God made a mistake with me. I believe that I was created this way. I believe I was created trans. I believe I was created to love who I love. But there's been this systemic failure that says that we are wrong. And so how do we navigate that? That's what this has been about. How do we give people safe avenues to seek out spiritual care? And we want to know, is this something we can do in a medical or health care system? Can somebody seek out spiritual care through their hospital system? And that's what we have worked through in this series. You know, people like, oh, Joanna, and I also get notes like this: you're just crazy, we should just get rid of religion altogether. Or I also get notes like, well, you know what, this isn't as big of a problem as you think it is. Well, just this week, when I'm recording this podcast, there's been big news, and I've known it's been coming for months and months and months. I am actually a member of the United Methodist Church here in America. And right now, as I speak, the United Methodist Church is having what's called their general conference. So like the worldwide conference, all the leaders of all the churches in the entire world are meeting in one place. And the reason that this conference is hitting the news right now is because the denomination that I belong to is literally about to split over LGBTQ inclusion. You heard that right. The church is about to break apart, about to split into two sects again. We're going to have another denomination of Christianity over whether I and others like me should be included in the church. The church right now is arguing, should we let people in? This is the reality we're dealing with. And that's what we're talking about this week. What I want to talk about this week is how do we navigate this, okay? Despite all the things I've laid out, despite all of the pretty ideas that have been thrown out in this series, how do I move forward? What do we do now? So if this idea is here, how do I actually... What do I want to do? I gave the how last week, but I actually want to tell you what I plan to do moving forward. This is going to be a little bit more of like an internal introspection for me. So thank you for listening to my self-therapy session. Not a good idea. Don't ever give yourself self-therapy or YouTube therapy, even though Dr. Z is great. like that should never be a supplement for therapy. But I want to talk this through today. How am I going to do this? What am I going to do moving forward? And because, I mean, as I'm looking at my own denomination splitting and I'm looking at the history of the church and what the Catholic Church has been saying recently, queer people are really, really frustrated with religion right now. Religion is really frustrating at the moment for queer people. So I, as a queer Christian, as somebody who intends to be a spiritual leader in our community, I want to do something about this. Because it's so nice to present these things and give and write a paper and do a series and do a presentation. Like next week, I'll be actually presenting. Imagine trying to put these 4 weeks, this like 4 hours of content into a 20-minute presentation. I'm going to have to do that next week. It's great to present this stuff. But what happens if we present and give great ideas and nothing happens? What if we just present the problems and we don't do anything about it? What we say in that point is, yeah, there's a problem, but it's somebody else's problem. And that is why systems fail in our world. That's why I worked at a church and was let go at this church because it never wanted to actually deal with its own issue. The problem was saying, hey, we know that LGBTQ people are a problem, but that's someone else's problem. We're not going to deal with it. And when it comes to your front door, then you have an issue. So what I want to do is say, how do we fight for LGBTQ people in faith? Well, we have to act. And if we don't act, we are going to give in to the system a failure. I'm done participating in failed systems. I just am. And the religious system of our world has failed LGBTQ people. And we cannot just stop here. We can't just present the problems and do nothing about it. It's like saying, yeah, the house is on fire and just continue watching the movie. I can't do that. It's just not how I operate. So for the rest of the podcast today, after we come back from this break, I'm going to give you some of my thoughts and my ideas of how we're going to work through and how we're going to move forward. And how am I actually going to address this problem myself? And maybe people will join me, maybe they won't. but I'm going to do it. And I will present to you how. So when we come back from the break, we're going to dive right into it. I'm so happy you're here today. It's nice to be kind of back to our normal format a little bit, but after the break, we're going to dive into the nitty gritty. We'll see you in a couple minutes. I don't know if you have noticed, but all of the music on this podcast is my own. I write and record all of my own music. And now, if you're a nerd like me and I love music things and want to know about what's going on with music and understand the inner workings and backgrounds of what musicians are doing, you can go to patreon.com/JoannaWhaley, and for $9.99 a month, if you select the higher membership, you can get all of the background and all of the demos and everything that I am working on for all my music. And also, you'll be a part of that LGBTQ community and their allies who are also interested in faith. For $9.99 a month, go to patreon.com/JoannaWhaley. Once again, it's patreon.com/JoannaWhaley. See you soon. All right, welcome back. Well, you heard it at the commercial break. Obviously, I'm going to get into some of that, but I mean, we're building a community of people right now, of LGBTQ people who are interested in spiritual things. And so that is, you know, at the risk of plugging Patreon again, joining the Patreon really is, we're building that community. There's already a whole bunch of people that are joining that community, and it's been really beautiful. So, okay, here's what we're going to do with all of this that I've been working through. There's kind of three major steps that I want to take in moving this kind of program forward. To recap for you, the program that I'm looking to do is to figure out how do we create spiritual care for people How do we create spiritual care for people in a clinical setting? Because church has been traumatizing. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually take all of this content. I'm going to take all of the content, all the resources, all the episodes, and I'm actually going to have a clickable PDF file, like a digital PDF, that will go to links and resources for people. This will probably live on my website, joannawhaley.com. But the point of this is because I want educators in CPE programs. If you don't know what CPE is, it's clinical pastoral education. And this is where chaplains go to begin their journey of becoming hospital chaplains. And also, like, pretty much every seminary student in the world has to, like, do what's called one unit of CPE, which is like a six-month internship in a hospital or some sort of clinical setting. So I want to give this resource to educators. And you're like, well, you're not qualified. Well, no, not quite yet, but I'm working on it. I'm working on those qualifications. And I'm trying to build my knowledge of this. But, I mean, it's important. Like, I want this project to be something that CPE educators and other, you know, systems could use to begin these conversations with their cohorts. Like, we need to understand that, like, there's an audience that needs to hear, hey, LGBTQ people are in your care right now. And they've been traumatized by church, and you may be the only conversation they have. You might be the only person they talk to about spirituality, possibly in their life. So how do you, as a clinical spiritual care provider, steward that responsibility? But I think it's important because we need to know that it's important. It's important that we understand that there's a need. And that this needs to be added to the basin of human knowledge, okay? Like, we need to understand that in clinical settings, in therapy sessions, there are people that will express spiritual needs. And if you're a spiritual care provider, then you need to understand you might literally be the only person they've ever talked to about this. And you might be the only person who they ever talk to about it in the future. So you have to figure out, is this something that I am willing to steward? Or is it something that's someone else's problem? And as I've talked about, that's not how I'm going to operate. You see, in 1763, the University of Pennsylvania, which was at that time called the Pennsylvania School of Medicine, they established the first ever medical school in the United States. And they graduated their first medical students in 1768. Okay, this was the first medical school. There was only 10 graduating students. So here's the thing. People were already like practicing medicine, right? Like people were already saying, oh, well, you know, well, we people get sick and people try to help. But what they did in this time, they said, you know what, we need to actually like create a way to educate each other on this, on these topics. So medical school started in the U.S. And now in order to treat someone, you have to have a medical license. You have to go to med school. And this all began then in 1765. So what I'm saying in the year 2024, when this is being recorded, I want to begin the conversation to say, hey, there's LGBTQ people in front of us that need spiritual care. And we need to somewhat formalize the idea and the process of this to say, we need to be trained on this. We need to be trained on how to steward an LGBTQ person in front of us. And this really needs to come from those who study theology. Those who study theology and those who are in clinical settings. Daniel Dennett, who was actually this week passed away. He's a philosopher and a self-proclaimed atheist. But he said this. He said, the claim that it is unfathomable to think that medical research would hold on to traditions in light of new discovery. He wrote that it is absurd that theological research has not done the same. I want to repeat that. Daniel Dennett, an atheist, you know, he was an atheist philosopher, died this week. He wrote that it is absurd that theological research has not done the same. And what I'm standing before you here, when I'm sitting here telling you right now, the listener of this show, is that the clinical world is studying and learning. And what I'm doing to you is presenting to us today to say that there is a need before us. There is a need that LGBTQ people want spiritual guidance. In my research, they have literally shown us that they would like it. But the systems of the church have said no to them. But what I'm telling you is that it is absurd that we just say it's not part of our tradition and ignore this group of people. So that's the first thing I want to do is bring education to this, which is why I'm really excited to tell you all that I've begun this project. This series has actually kicked me into a whole new educational journey. So right now, as I sit here, I am a seminary student. I am getting my master's currently at Wartburg Theological Seminary, which is what this series and this project I've been working on is for that school. But this whole project and this series right here, Healing After, actually led me to have some conversations in the last week or two to begin a doctorate program. And I'm going to start studying this deeper and doing doctorate work to, as I said, build the human knowledge, to put more words to this and to put more words to the phenomenon that is LGBTQ spiritual interest and how we navigate that and how we work through it. The next thing I'm going to be doing is this fall. Really exciting development in my life is I'll be starting a full-time residency at the University of Michigan to be a hospital chaplain. This is the next step in my kind of licensing process to become a full-time chaplain. So I'm getting my master's so that I can do that. And I'll be finishing my master's halfway through my residency at the hospital. And I will be seeking out to get licensed as a clinical chaplain in the United States. But from there, I mean, the idea is that I'm going to be, I would like to, through that process and through the process of discerning beginning doctorate work, is to talk with the University of Michigan and have some talks or potentially work through ideas that say, you know, hey, could we pilot a program? Could we pilot a program that works with the therapists, that works with and builds a referral process, begin the conversations with U of M to potentially discuss a piloting a program. Now, I'm not saying we're going to do this. What I'm saying is like have those conversations, at least where I'm at right now in my educational journey. And so I'm going to be talking with the University of Michigan. We'll see. It might happen. It may not. We don't know. I'm not going to make any promises. But here's what I am doing personally, like education or not, I'm going to go get the education. So like whether medical system initially begins this or not, that's why I started a Patreon. I started Patreon because I wanted to start creating a network of people who are connected and make it sustainable for myself. Of course, this has to be sustainable. But I really believe that it would be interesting whether medical systems pick this up or not, but to have ACPE, which is like the governing body of chaplains, there's ACPE and then there's another one. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But these governing bodies of certified chaplains who are licensed, but it would be interesting to begin piloting like places where people can come. I don't really want to, the term private practice is not like a perfect term because this isn't a medical, this isn't therapy, but to be working with people in whether it's in some sort of community space where chaplains, people can set up appointments to talk with chaplains who are certified. So whether that's in some coffee house that has a room in the back or whatever, wherever that is, but having some sort of private entity to do this for people. When you meet them, they can be referred. You can refer them. You can see them all the time. Because people need this. Whether we want to say it or not, this is a need. LGBTQ people, as we've seen in this series, have been oppressed by religion, but they're still interested in spirituality. So it's our responsibility. It's my responsibility as a spiritual leader in this community to say, yes, I'm here for you. I'm here to help you and serve you and be with you and walk with you through some of the darkest moments of life. I'm here to walk with you through your family rejection. I'm here to process coming out and what it means between you and God. That's what we're working on here. I want to thank you for joining me for this series. I know it's been very academic and long, but I'm just thankful to have each and every one of you walking with me through this. Let's see where it goes. We'll keep you tuned in. The podcast will continue next week with a new series. I don't even have it in front of me what I'm talking about next week, so we'll see, but thankful you're here. please go to join me on patreon.com/JoannaWhaley and join that community. Get that spiritual support now while this thing's building on the ground. This has been a production of Whaley Media, and we'll see you next week for a brand new series. Have a good one.